Welcome to the very first episode of my new podcast, Cavaliercast, The Civil War in Words. We'll look at everything and anything to do with the Civil War, or as it's often referred to, the War of the Three Kingdoms, which took place between 1639 and 1651. My name is Mark Turnbull, and I've been fascinated with the Civil War since the age of 10, following a visit to Helmsley Castle in Yorkshire. To launch Cavaliercast, I'm going to talk you through the Battle of Marston Moor, which took place 376 years ago. On a moor just outside of York, an overlooked battle took place. It's reputed to be the second largest on English soil. The 2nd of July 1644 was a watershed moment in the English Civil War, a conflict that saw brothers fighting brothers, fathers fighting sons, and friends putting aside friendships as the nation divided in support of king or parliament. 6 months prior, a Scottish army crossed the border in support of the English parliament, and this game-changing event forced King Charles's troops into a continued retreat from Newcastle to York. The city was surrounded by the parliamentarian and Scottish allies, and gradually choked for 9 weeks in an attempt to kill off the king's support in the north. Enter the king's nephew, Prince Rupert of the Rhine, a furiously energetic, loyal and brave commander with a reputation for ruthless cavalry charges and a renowned pet poodle. The king wrote that he would esteem his crown little less if York was lost, and the undefeated 24-year-old was charged with saving the city. Leaving Shrewsbury, armed with the king's letter, Rupert would keep it on his person until his dying day. Arriving within 14 miles of York, Rupert's presence was keenly felt, and the allies withdrew from the city and formed upon Marston Moor to block his advance. Rupert led 15,000 men, while the allies totaled 24,000. The unpredictable Rupert, however, did not adhere to the Roman road, the modern A59, and as if following his own 17th century sat-nav, he made a daring 22-mile diversion around the north of the allies. Crossing the rivers, Rupert put a protective moat of water between him and the enemy and raised the siege of York in one fell swoop. There, he read the king's letter once more. If York be relieved and you beat the rebels' army of both kingdoms which are before it, then, but otherwise not, I may possibly make a shift upon the defensive. The no-nonsense prince saw only a directive to defeat the enemy in battle. With little rest, his military planning was interrupted by a second crucial letter, this time from the Earl of Newcastle, who commanded York's royalist garrison. Your name, sir, hath terrified the great generals, and they fly before it. I am made of nothing but thankfulness and obedience to your highness's commands. Taking the gushing letter at face value and not accounting for Newcastle's rather pompous character and also his magnificent achievements in the service of the king, the prince sent a messenger to instruct the earl to take his 3,000 troops to Marston Moor forthwith. Rupert arrived on the moor at 9 a.m. on the 2nd of July, but found neither friend nor foe present. Instead, the allies, who never expected the outnumbered prince to fight, had withdrawn to Tadcaster. Strung out in marching columns, they were shocked to hear of Rupert the Devil's phantom-like appearance and turned about. Once back on Marston Moor, the allies were surprisingly able to marshal their men unhindered. Rupert was tempered by the continued absence of Newcastle and his men, and the Earl eventually arrived, alone, at midday. By 2 in the afternoon, the mouths of the allied artillery spewed round shot and the men chanted psalms. Humid air enveloped the moor and warned of a coming storm. Under clouds as dark as Rupert's mood, the York men finally arrived at 4 o'clock, and Rupert judging the deer to be spent, stood his men down. As royal campfires smoked, the allied commander, Lord Leven, sent his men on the offensive, and they marched down the slopes to rumbles of thunder. Oliver Cromwell and his cavalry on the allied left wing headed straight for Lord Byron's royalist horsemen. Byron advanced against orders, thus losing the defence of a ditch and masking the fire of his own musketeers, and he was routed. On the allies' right wing, Sir Thomas Fairfax was forced to contend with the formidable terrain. His men broke and were chased off the field by most of the royalist horsemen, who squandered their advantage. The remaining royalist cavalry grasped the opportunity to attack the allied infantry in the centre. As the allied soldiers began to crumble, even their three commanders thought all was lost and fled to Tadcaster. Rupert, sensing victory was within his grasp, took his cavalry reserve and went to head off Cromwell's success. A mammoth struggle ensued until Cromwell, wounded on the cheek, was victorious, and Rupert was forced to hide for his life in a bean field. With the run of the moor, Cromwell defeated the remaining royalist horsemen and decimated their infantry. Darkness attempted to obliterate sight of the carnage, but the full moon picked out the faces of the 4,000 royalist dead. Newcastle's white coats, after arriving late, courageously refused to surrender. They had once vowed to dye their tunics in the blood of the enemy, yet as they were massacred, it was their own blood that did so. Another notable casualty was Rupert's dog, Boy. Portrayed by the enemy as demonic and Rupert's talisman, the poodle's death signified the end of his master's invincibility. 2 hours of fighting was all that it took to seal the fate of the king's cause in the north, and York would fall 2 weeks later. I hope you enjoyed the first episode of Cavalier Cast. All feedback is very welcome, and to keep in touch for the next episode, why not join me on Twitter at 1642author or on Facebook at facebook.com/MarkTurnbullAuthor. And for more Civil War articles, you can visit my blog, which can be found at www.allegianceofblood.com. Take care, and thanks for listening.